Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto talking to you from beautiful Dallas, Texas, April 29th on Tuesday, 5 o'clock Central Time. And I say beautiful because we've had an absolutely gorgeous day, the kind of day where you go out for a walk, the kind of day you go out and play golf, the kind of day you go out and play baseball, but my baseball team doesn't play in the afternoons anymore, especially weekdays. So anyway, it was just an absolutely lovely day to be here in Dallas, and I hope wherever you are, that you're having just a beautiful day, or just as beautiful of a day as we're having here. It's like 65, 66, sunny, a little windy, but just absolutely a lovely day. Before I start, I want to say hello to all of you who have sent me emails, and particularly those of you who've invited me to be your friend, and you know what I'm talking about, in the Blog Talk Radio Network family, if you will. You can become friends with other shows, and many of you have sent me these, and I finally figured out how to reply. I know some of you are probably going to think that I'm an idiot because I don't know how to use a computer. Well, part of that is true. I'm not a very technical person, but I was able finally over the weekend to figure out what to do, and I replied to all of you, and I'm very, very grateful that you've taken the time to offer me your friendship as a fellow host, and I will do the same here on our show as we grow, and we can help each other build an audience, and we can certainly help each other get the word out about the wonderful opportunities here at Blog Talk Radio and the many, many people who are joining this family. And I'm amazed at the number of shows and the number of people who are doing that every single day. Today at lunchtime, I was sitting there, you know, writing down some things that I wanted to talk about, and I had about five or six things, and then on my way back to my office, I hear on the radio that Barack Obama is doing a press conference on Reverend Wright, and that, of course, that has changed my entire schedule here of things that I wanted to talk about, because that's what everybody's talking about in this country, and I know that there are some of you who listen to the show in Mexico. There's a lady that listens to the show in Germany. She sent me an email a few weeks ago. But here in the United States, what we're talking about is Barack Obama and Reverend Wright. Everything else has been literally been moved off the table. And all we're talking about is this amazing relationship between Barack Obama and Reverend Wright. And I think we've learned a lot about these two men over the last 48 hours. We've learned a lot about them, and that's one of the things that I want to talk about. I don't want to repeat everything that you have already seen or heard, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about my impressions of these two men, because I think we've learned a great deal about them and exactly what kind of men they are, and in the case of Barack Obama, what kind of a man he is vis-a-vis the possibility that he could become president of the United States. So I'm going to get into that in a few minutes here. Before I do, though, I wanted just to go over some of the other issues that are out there. And let me begin by recommending that you go to Rick Moran's website. We have had him on the show before. His website is Right Wing Nut House, although Rick is also writing quite a bit over at the American Thinker website, which is another one of our favorite websites. And I want you to go over there and check out a very good article that Rick wrote about the New York Times. Now, for those of you, well, I don't have to tell you how I feel about the New York Times. I think that it has, over the last few years, become a very irresponsible newspaper. It used to be, you know, you go back 15, 20 years ago, and the New York Times was actually a very good newspaper, a very good liberal newspaper, and there's nothing wrong with that. We need a good liberal newspaper in the United States. But over the last few years, I think it's become very, very much of a left-wing newspaper. And I think to its detriment, I believe it's become a left-wing newspaper. But anyway, what Rick was talking about in a sort of semi-funny post is that he basically says we should save the New York Times. And of course, what he's talking about is the financial difficulties that the New York Times finds itself in. The New York Times is, as we speak, having a very difficult financial period. It's going through some very difficult times. Now, to be fair, a lot of other newspapers are having similar problems. For example, our paper here in Dallas, the Dallas Morning News, has had some very serious circulation problems over the last couple of years. I don't know the exact figure, but I don't think I'm off if I say that over the last 2 years, the Dallas Morning News has probably had anywhere from 15 to 20% loss of circulation. Now, I don't care what kind of business you're in. If you lose 15 to 20% of your subscriptions or 15 to 20% of your customers, that's going to have an impact on your business. I don't care what business you're in. It's going to have an impact. And in the case of the New York Times, they've had some circulation problems. They've also have made, from what I understand, some bad business decisions that they're having to deal with. So anyway, Rick wrote a very interesting article about saving the New York Times, because what are we going to do if we lose the New York Times? You know, where are we going to go, or who are we going to beat up? So anyway, you may want to check out that particular post. I thought it was a very interesting one. And, you know, I've had two real problems with the New York Times over the last couple of years, two things that I thought that they did that were really, really irresponsible. The first one, of course, was the story about the NSA wiretapping, which was, horrible. You don't release that kind of secret information. You don't tell terrorists that we're listening to their conversations, particularly when we're doing it in a time of war and when we're listening to conversations of people who want to blow up Americans. I mean, this is so ridiculous to me that they would actually do a story like that, especially when the courts have sided with George Bush. This is the amazing thing about this. The courts have sided with George W. Bush, with President Bush on this. Every time they go to the courts, President Bush wins, because at the end of the day, I think the courts understand that we have to defend ourselves, and President Bush was not doing anything illegal in authorizing this kind of wiretapping. So that was the one story that really made me very angry with the New York Times. And the other one, of course, is more of a regional story that we are interested in here in Texas, and that is when a couple of years ago, in the summer of 2006, the New York Times basically gave the left-wing candidate in Mexico, Mr. Lopez Obrador, they basically gave him free space to write an outrageous rant against the Mexican election. It was horrible. It was absolutely terrible. And I thought it was extremely bad, because they didn't give the same opportunity to the other parties. So, I mean, if you're going to give one political party the opportunity to write about an election or to make its case in an election, the very least you can do is give the opposition a similar opportunity. So anyway, I have not been very happy with the New York Times for quite some time. And, of course, more recently they tried to do that story on John McCain, you know, alleging that John McCain had an affair with some lobbyist or something like that, which, again, blew up in their faces, because they're just not they're not doing a very good job as journalists these days. And that is part of the reason why they're having so many financial problems. It's not just circulation. I think a lot of people are just fed up with what they've been doing. So check out Rick Moran's article about the New York Times, and I think you'll find it very interesting. The next item that I have here on my agenda has to do with oil prices. And like many of you, I have to pay, you know, $3.50 or whatever the price of gasoline is these days. And I don't like it any more than anybody else does. But I do think that our politicians are beating, they're sort of barking up the wrong tree when it comes to the price of oil. I don't think this is an oil company problem. Our problem in the United States when it comes to oil prices or gasoline prices is the fact that we don't have enough supply. And we have not done anything as a country over the last 25 or 30 years to develop our oil supplies. You know, we haven't built refineries. We haven't built nuclear plants. We have not drilled for more oil. We got plenty of oil. That's not the problem. So I think that the American people need to send a message to our politicians, and that is that we need more oil. We don't need more demagoguery. We don't need more attacks on oil companies. At the end of the day, the oil companies are legal companies operating under the laws of the United States, and they're creating a lot of jobs. And for many people who invest in these companies, it's a very fine investment, many retirement programs. And many people invest in these companies. And I think it's great that they're profitable. I mean, we should have profitable companies in the United States. But I think to beat them up and to make the oil companies the bad guy in this whole thing, I believe, is a very irresponsible thing to do. So I'm not, you know, I don't have anything to do with oil companies. I don't invest in oil companies. I don't work for an oil company. I don't do any projects with oil companies like you. I just put gasoline in my car. But I am at least realistic enough to know that we should not be beating up on the oil companies. That's not the problem. They're not the reason that gasoline is $3.50. There's two reasons. Number one, we've had a tremendous increase in demand because of China and because of India. And at the same time, we have not kept up with supplies. So hopefully the American people can deliver this message, and our next Congress, our next president, and our next Congress can actually sit down and figure out some way that we can increase our supplies, because that's the answer, at least in the short term. You know, sometime, at some point down the road, we'll have alternative energy, and I hope we do, because I don't like using oil any more than anybody else does. But right now, oil is all we have, and we should be smart about it. One of the items this week, which is of extreme importance to the upcoming election, is this Supreme Court decision that it's okay for the state of Indiana to require a picture ID when people vote. And you know, when I first heard that this case was going to the Supreme Court, my reaction was, why is this even an issue? How is it possible that we've reached the point in the United States that people are actually debating the idea of having a picture or requiring people to identify themselves with a picture when they're going to vote? I mean, just a few weeks ago, we had a new library that opened not too far from us, but the library happens to be in Dallas, and the library card that I had before was with Carrollton, the Carrollton Public Library. So I had to go over to the Dallas, you know, I had to cross the city line, if you will, and go over to the Dallas Public Library and get a new card. And I had to identify myself. I had to show them my driver's license with a picture. I had to do that. And I'm sitting there saying, if I have to show a driver's license with a picture ID to a young woman who is going to issue me a library card, why are we debating asking people for a picture ID when we're talking about voting? I mean, it's so ridiculous. And I'm very, very happy that the Supreme Court decided the way it did, which is to say that it's okay for Indiana to require a photo ID. And that, of course, will mean that other states can do it. And, you know, the big complaint, you know, what I'm hearing from the whining, there's always whining. I don't know what it is about these liberals. They're always whining about something. But they're whining about the fact that older people and poor people are not going to be able to get their, you know, their photo ID. Look, if that's the case, then we can do whatever it takes. We can, you know, maybe send somebody out to see these folks or give them some time to register or whatever. But it's just hard for me to believe that asking people for a photo ID when they're going to vote is somehow a violation of their human rights. I don't agree with it. So I congratulate the Supreme Court on what I think is a very wise decision to allow the state of Indiana to require people to have a photo ID. Now, of course, this is going to have an impact on the 2008 election because many, many states probably will update their laws and require people to show an ID when they vote. And again, I don't understand why we're arguing about this. It makes common sense to me. The last thing that I wanted to talk about, and this is more of a humorous thing before we get to Barack Obama, I don't know how many of you have been enjoying Operation Chaos, and that's, of course, Rush Limbaugh's Operation Chaos. And today, while I was having lunch, I was listening to a little bit of Rush, and I don't know how much of an impact Operation Chaos is having on our elections. My guess is that maybe not as much as perhaps some people think. I just don't think that people are going to be changing party memberships. I mean, I wouldn't do it. But I have to tell you that in terms of a radio program and in terms of a radio stunt And in terms of getting into the heads of the Democrats, Operation Chaos is a total smashing success. I mean, the Democrats are livid about this. The media is talking about this. So I guess Rush Limbaugh has accomplished what he wanted to do, was to get into their heads and talk a little bit about, you know, creating a little chaos in the Democratic Party. But the reality is that the Democrats don't need a lot of help when it comes to creating a chaotic situation. They've got one, and they've created one. And over the last 48 hours, chaos really became chaotic because of a man named Jeremiah Wright, Reverend Wright. And, of course, what happened was, everybody knows the story, Reverend Wright yesterday, I guess over the weekend, he was here in Dallas, I think, on Sunday, but he didn't make any statements over the weekend that were that outrageous. I mean, he sort of kept within, you know, he stayed within the theology, which is fine. I mean, that's what a pastor does. And then on Monday morning, when he went to the National Press Club, for the first part of his presentation, he was basically talking about theology and the history of the black church and stuff like that. And I found that kind of interesting, frankly. It was a nice history lesson. And then they got into the question and answer session, and that's when Reverend Wright really hit it out of the park. Not exactly what Barack Obama had in mind, but I mean, he just went, I mean, he put on one of the best shows that I've ever seen in quite some time, and put himself right on stage, obviously at the expense of Barack Obama. Initially, Barack Obama didn't respond a heck of a lot, but today, this afternoon, as I was saying before, Barack Obama had a press conference and he was answering some questions. And I think where I want to go with all of this is not so much to replay or to relive the last 30 or 45 days between Barack Obama and Reverend Wright, but I want to talk a little bit about what I think all of this says about these two men. In the case of Reverend Wright, I think we can conclude, I mean, I don't think anybody can doubt this now, that Reverend Wright really loves publicity, that he really loves the situation that he's in. And I think a lot of people are speculating about this, but I tend to agree with Newt Gingrich, and I tend to agree with some others who think that what Reverend Wright was trying to do here is sort of get back at Obama, because he feels as if Obama had sort of walked away from him a few weeks ago when he said that he had not heard these remarks and so on. So I think Reverend Wright was maybe firing a shot, if you will, at Barack Obama and just sort of saying, hey, you know, I'm still here. Now, if Reverend Wright had not done the question and answer session yesterday, I don't think we would be talking about him. But today Barack Obama did something that I believe says a great deal about Barack Obama as a man. And at least in my mind, it tells me that Barack Obama is not the kind of man that you want to have in the Oval Office. I think you can really tell a great deal about a man in times of adversity. I think you can tell a great deal about who a man is and how tough he is and what kind of a person he is in times of adversity. And I think today, at least in my mind, over the last 48 hours, I've learned a great deal about Barack Obama as a man, and what I see I don't like. I don't like. It has nothing to do with his liberal views. It is simply that I don't like the way he's done all of this. First of all, today in the press conference, Barack Obama basically said, I mean, I don't have the audio to play for you, but he basically said that he wasn't totally aware of all these remarks by Reverend Wright. It's almost as if either Barack Obama, I mean, this is what I don't understand. He was in this church for 20 years. Now, either he never went to church, which is a possibility. I mean, some people join a church and they never go, particularly a church like this, as big as this one. You know, you don't have to go to church. You know, you can, you know, they're not going to miss you, in other words, because it's such a big church. So maybe he never went. Maybe he slept through the whole service, which is another possibility. You know, I go to a Catholic church, not that big, but some people sleep through it. I mean, you can see a couple of people. Now, they're generally older people who sleep through the Mass. Sometimes they just fall asleep because they're older. But, you know, not everybody pays attention when they go to Mass, so possibly Barack Obama never went to mass. He slept. Maybe his mind was somewhere else, and he just, you know, wasn't listening to the minister. Or the other possible explanation is that he knew all of this all along, but today it became convenient for him to basically disengage from Reverend Wright. And that, of course, tells you a great deal about this man. I will tell you this just as a personal reflection. I went to, when 9/11 happened back in 2001, I think all of us were very upset by what happened on 9/11 for obvious reasons. You know, we saw our fellow citizens being killed, and we saw our country being attacked, and we saw the buildings collapse. I think the images of the two towers collapsing is something that I'll never forget. You know, watching these two amazing buildings collapsing in front of us was something that I'll never forget. I was extremely touched by the flight, United 93, the men and the passengers in that flight who fought back. I was very touched by that. And, of course, over at the Pentagon, the same thing. So when I went to church on the Sunday after 9/11, I went there because I thought it was important to try to reconcile everything that had happened, and I wanted to hear a positive message, and I wanted to walk away from all of this with a better feeling. And our priest that day spoke very nicely. He spoke. He didn't get into the politics of it or the national security implications of it. He simply spoke in very general terms about tragedy and how sometimes it's hard to understand tragedy. And but he did say, look, we got to come together as a nation. We have to help the people, the victims. We have to help the families, the widows, the orphans. And we have to really support and admire and remember the heroes, the firefighters and other heroes who were injured or lost their lives that day. And I thought our priest gave a presentation. He's not a great speaker, but nevertheless, on that one day, he spoke from the heart, and I think he spoke, he told us, I think, what many of us wanted to hear, which is a message of hope and a message of a Christian message related to 9/11. Now, it is inconceivable to me, and maybe I'm too patriotic, maybe I'm just the way I am, but it's inconceivable to me that any human being could sit in a church, I don't care what church it was, and listen to what Reverend Wright said on the sermon after 9/11, and listen to what he said, and not be very, very angry at Reverend Wright. I think that I can guarantee you that in the church that I go to, just a small Catholic church here in Carrollton, Texas, that if I had heard that kind of stuff coming from the pulpit, I would have been in the priest's office, on at least on the phone, on Monday saying, you know, I cannot accept this, and you have to apologize for this. There's no way that you can get away with this. And how Barack Obama didn't stand up to Reverend Wright after that sermon is something that I will never understand. How he can be with this man for 20 years, and he knew what Reverend Wright was saying. I mean, come on, Barack Obama, you knew what he was saying. The idea that Barack Obama just found out today that his reverend says these things, I mean, that's pretty silly. So I think we're learning a great deal about Barack Obama, and I would put it in these terms. We're learning two things about him that I believe are not the kinds of qualities that you want to have in a president. Number one, this was a profile in accommodation, meaning he is simply posturing himself politically. He understands that he has to walk away from Reverend Wright. He cannot stay with him. So he is, in fact, in my mind, confirming what Reverend Wright said. When Reverend Wright yesterday said that Barack Obama was acting like a politician, that's exactly what Barack Obama did today. He acted like a politician who was cutting ties with someone who had been pretty important in his life. I mean, this is a man who literally picked him up when he was a young politician, who introduced him to a lot of people, who helped him get started, who you know, was his mentor according to his own book. So I think that Reverend Wright's point yesterday that Barack Obama is nothing but a politician or was reacting to all of this as a politician. I think we saw evidence of that today. The other thing that we saw in Barack Obama today that disqualifies him, in my opinion, to be president of the United States is that we did not see a profile in leadership. What we saw today, again, was a profile in accommodation. And I will tell you this, one of the things that I admire most about President Bush is the fact that he is willing to take a position, he's willing to take an unpopular position, and he's willing to stand up and say, this is what I believe, and, you know, if you don't like me, that's okay, but this is what I believe. I think I would have respected Barack Obama a lot more if he had come out today and said, look, folks, yes, my pastor was a little wacko, he was a little crazy, he said some things that weren't the best, but he was my pastor, and I'm going to stand by him. You know, as maybe I would have respected that more, but for him today to say, you know, I didn't know this man. It's almost like the man that I saw on TV was not the man that I've seen for the last 20 years. I have a problem with that because I don't believe it. I don't believe that Barack Obama just discovered yesterday that Reverend Wright has some of these radical views. So I would say that I think the biggest lesson that we've drawn from all of this, I think the bottom line from all of this is that Barack Obama has demonstrated to the rest of us, at least to me, that he does not have the one quality that I want in a president, and that's leadership and someone who will stand up and doesn't change his mind every 30 days. I mean, I don't know how Barack Obama can reconcile everything that he has said about Barack Obama over the last 30 days and what he said today. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to do it. So where does it go from here? I really don't know exactly where it goes from here. I think it's going to be very difficult for Hillary Clinton to knock him off for the simple reason that neither one of these two guys is going to get to the nomination with enough delegates, and the delegates are going to have to choose which one of these two is more electable. But I also think it's going to be very difficult to take it from Barack Obama because there's going to be a strong reaction on the floor if they take it from Barack Obama. So I think Operation Chaos, not necessarily what Rush Limbaugh is doing, but just the chaos in the Democratic Party, I really think got more chaotic today. And I think you're going to see some real chaos between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton here over the next 2 or 3 months. And all of this will play out eventually somehow. How it will all play out, I don't know. And I think we will see probably in the next 2 or 3 months how it all happens. But the one thing I can say, and I'll say it again, what I saw from Barack Obama today at that press conference is that Barack Obama is not much of a man. And he certainly is not the kind of man that I want in the Oval Office, because things are going to be very serious in the Oval Office over the next 10 or 20 years. I mean, we've got some really difficult issues that we got to deal with, the war on terror, entitlements. We got some judges that we're going to have to appoint. And I, you know, Barack Obama, frankly, is simply not the kind of man that I want sitting in the Oval Office. Again, it has nothing to do with his liberal positions. It has more to do with his qualities as a man, and I didn't see very good qualities from Barack Obama here in the last 48 hours. Well, that's going to wrap it up for April 30th. On Thursday, May 1st, we may be doing a show about John McCain. I can't quite tell you everything that we're going to do yet because I don't have it all put together, but I'm trying to get a few friends of mine who are John McCain supporters, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Hispanic vote and John McCain, what I think will be a very important component of the upcoming election. But I don't have it all bundled up, as they say. It's not quite ready to go, so I don't want to promise you. But if you check us out on Thursday, maybe that will be our show, and I'm looking forward to it because I think it would be a very good show, and hopefully we'll have a few friends of mine who are working in the McCain campaign, and we can talk a little bit about what is happening with McCain vis-a-vis the Hispanic vote. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, signing off on April 30th. I want to thank all of you for listening. I hope that it was interesting, and I look forward to touching base with you again in a couple of days here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.